To be happy in every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy.
Hello, my name is Gail Moskowitz and you are listening to Mental Health Matters. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and I've been practicing in Richmond, Virginia for about 31 years. Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality, and discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. Psychological issues are complex and they are misunderstood. You know, all of us have had issues that are emotional in nature. We have blind spots and we get confused. We have all experienced sadness or depression, anxiety or panic, peer pressure, loss, and the list goes on. Yet, as a society, we continuously underfund mental health programs. We have morally confused notions of how to make our pain go away, and we're terrible about judging others for their behavior. Each week on Mental Health Matters, I like to introduce a topic. Sometimes I have a guest, sometimes not. We'll discuss the topic, and then I hope that you, the listener, will give me a ring, 649-9737, 649-9737, and ask me a question, or feel free to weigh in on the subject. Today, we're going to have the second half of the show on post-traumatic stress disorder. Last week, we began to talk about that, and we differentiated it from an acute traumatic episode versus a more long-lasting, ongoing post-traumatic stress disorder. And we'll get back to that in just a moment. As I said, if you'd like to call me today, please feel free to call at 649-9737. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM. You can listen to the program in real time by logging onto WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. If you click on my show, you can get to my website. If you'd like to send me an email, you may do so by sending it to the letters UR. mentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. That's one word, yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. But instead of the word your, just the letters, you are. I understand that's hip lingo for texting. And I figured that all out myself. I was so proud of myself. Anyway, we're going to get back to the topic of post-traumatic stress disorder. Last week, I started out by telling you about getting mugged on my doorstep. And I told you that it took me about a year to feel physically safe again in the world. And that event did sort of shift me in the world, but it didn't shift me off my axis. It didn't give me long-term problems. It did make me a little bit more conscious of my environment. I'm more safe now. If I see something that makes me uncomfortable, I don't hesitate to call the police. So in that regard, the response, the acute stress response, went on for about a year. And if you remember, I told you that I would stop at a stoplight in a neighborhood that felt uncomfortable for me, and if there wasn't anyone in the crosswalk, and if it was late at night, I would just go through the red light because I didn't want to stay there. And that sort of felt kind of odd to me, and I felt anxious for about a year, but it abated. So post-traumatic stress disorder is a severe anxiety disorder, and it can develop after one is exposed to any event that results in psychological trauma. So one of the things that we often think of is we think about soldiers returning from the war, and so many of them are vulnerable to having post-traumatic stress disorder. It is actually these soldiers that this field, that this diagnosis began to be looked at and researched, and often things through war are how we come up with how we do research in medicine and in mental health have often been in the face of or in response to the things we've learned during war. So we often think about that. It could also involve somebody dying unexpectedly, someone you're close to, that's just so shocking. It can involve somebody living through persistent violence that they don't feel like they can get away from. Someone else can be plagued with post-traumatic stress disorder after having been lived through physical, sexual, or psychological abuse. And what these incidents do is they overwhelm the individual's general coping mechanisms. And they go into almost a bit of a shock, a trauma that causes them to almost be numb because they cannot take in the nuances of everything that is going on. And then what happens is that they have this increased autonomic arousal that happens in response to this trauma, where they feel their emotions more strongly, their anger, their sadness. They get more confused. They might have terrible time sleeping or staying awake. And while they are sleeping, they will experience flashbacks or terrible nightmares or what we've come to call night terrors, where their whole physiology shifts in response to this terrible thing going on while they're sleeping. They can wake up in sweat with their heart racing and as if what is going on or what had happened is going on right at that moment because they relive this incident or incidents over and over and over again. So they begin to become both hypervigilant, where they're constantly looking around to protect themselves, and yet they are really rendered without protection at all. So this kind of post-traumatic stress disorder will affect everything, relationships, your ability to work. For some people, it might affect their ability to just have any good feelings in their life at all. It affects their ability to function in the most fundamental of ways. Some people find that they can't get themselves clean enough, and others give up bathing at all, that they don't even have the energy to take care of their very basic physical needs. A lot of people who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder might have drug addiction, alcohol problems. They have secondary medical complications. And it really does permeate every aspect of their lives. And it's important then that people who carry this diagnosis, who are suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder, get help. So one of the things that that people with post-traumatic stress disorder exhibit is an inability to mediate their own emotional response. So I'm going to give you an example of exactly what I mean. You know, let's just think about ourselves, okay? Let's think about how we are in the world for just a moment. And think about something that might throw you into a lot of anxiety. For instance, going on a job interview. Almost everyone can relate to that. So even if you know you have the skills to go and do a good job at this job interview, even if you think through what you're going to do and try to intuit the questions that the interviewer might ask you, and you wear the right clothes and you get to the job interview in plenty of time, walking through that door, think about what that feels like when you first sit down in that job interview and you begin to know that you have to begin to answer these questions. Think about how you're feeling. You might get a little nervous, your heart might race, your hands might feel a little sweaty, but think about how this reaction shifts you from being the person you are. Perhaps you're a person who, you know, believes in yourself and believes in your competencies, and that's who you are on a regular basis. Think about how just being at this interview shifts your very sense of self, shifts you into feeling maybe a little giddy, or you'll laugh nervously, or opposite, you might find that you have a hard time smiling and that you're so over-serious at this job interview, but it shifts the very essence of who you are. I just want to say that this is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters on WRIR 97.3 FM. We're talking today about post-traumatic stress disorder. If you have any thoughts about this subject or would like to ask me a question, please feel free to call 649-9737, 649-9737. So let's go back to this sense of yourself when you're in this anxious situation. Think about how you would like to be your best self in this situation, but you're shifted from your regular self because of anxiety, fear, a little confusion, not being able to know exactly what you're going to be asked, whatever it is. Okay, now think about yourself in another way. Think about yourself and how you feel when you really get angry. I mean, when you really get angry, when you're just so angry. Think about how your whole sense of how you think about the world. Think about being angry at someone you generally love and how you can begin to build a case in your mind about this person because you're angry at them. And think about how you feel physically. And think about how you might even say some really negative, awful things to yourself in your mind's eye about this person. And that, again, you're shifted from your best sense of self, from how you usually are in the world, to a different side of you. And think about those feelings so we can all relate to them. Now, let me say to you how people who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder become so incapable of managing their emotional responses that each emotional response really shifts them out of the very essence of how they function in the world. It shifts them from who they know they might be, their pool of understanding about the world, their sense of safety, to all sorts of things that make their lives really difficult to deal with for themselves. So instead of being sad, they're rendered with such a sense of despair over the smallest issues. Instead of being annoyed by something, anger permeates their being. They see somebody that looks like the person who did something untoward to them, and they respond to this person in a triggered, out-of-control way. And think about how that individual's life must be on a regular basis when they cannot even keep themselves what we call intact. They break up into, their very personality breaks up into fragments in response to managing all of the emotion that goes on in one's life on an everyday basis. These individuals are really hurting inside, and it is difficult for them to articulate their needs because it permeates their every being. So now let me begin to talk about how somebody with post-traumatic stress disorder might go about getting some help. But before I talk about the psychological aspects of that, I think it's going to be really important for me to talk about how this affects an individual's neurobiology. So again, let me give you an example. You know how if you become very, very frightened, and that feeling that you have where your heart might all of a sudden race, or your hands might all of a sudden shake, or your head might all of a sudden feel like it's about to explode, and then you figure out that whatever that shock was to your system, that wasn't scary at all. It was just a shadow, or your teenager was behind the door and popped out and yelled at you when you walked into the room. And you now intellectually know you're not in any danger, and yet your body has not calmed down yet. And let me explain to you that post-traumatic stress disorder, that these symptoms may result when a traumatic event causes an overactive adrenaline response. And this response literally creates a new deep neurological pattern in your brain. It literally changes your brain waves. And it literally sets you up to become hyper responsive to future fearful situations, so that instead of something having to really be over the edge that might make you anxious or scare you, that the smallest nuances keep that hyper overactive adrenaline response going. So these neurological biochemical changes in your brain and body really make this indentation on our very on how we think, on how we feel. This isn't a little thing. This has now shifted your brain chemistry. This is who you begin to be. So because this is happening and certain other biochemical reactions are happening neurologically, the first thing that might actually be helpful to you is to have an evaluation done by a good, good psychiatrist who understands what happens neurobiologically as a result of post-traumatic stress disorder, or in conjunction with post-traumatic stress disorder, and that this individual, that a psychiatrist might really be able to look to see if there is some medication that might be of help to you. And so that's an important thing to begin to look at. Now, let me say, again, I'm going to get into the ways in which treatment might be of help to somebody with post-traumatic stress disorder. So The first thing we're going to look at is the neurobiology and whether some medication might be of help to you. The second thing we're going to look at is the kind of therapy that one might seek in order to get some help from post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, let me just go through a couple of ways in which post-traumatic stress disorder is manifested. We've already said in war. We've already said that that soldiers being exposed to violence, causing violence to another individual, or just, you know, so exposed to violence or causing violence to another individual, or having violence perpetrated on them. Another way is the death, the unexpected shocking death of a loved one, perhaps a young loved one. Another way is sexual or physical abuse that might happen to a child or an adult. And again, understand that if a child is abused, that this child is going to register this horrible act in a different way. They may not remember it as clearly. And understand that it will permeate into their very development and keep them from developing in a helpful way, in a way that teaches them to manage the very emotional aspects of their lives differently than how this will affect an adult. So this being said, perhaps we want to look at different kinds of treatment for different kinds of individuals who have post-traumatic stress disorder. It seems as if they have found that soldiers have done very well working through these issues with a competent therapist and in a group setting. This way they can come together and really begin to talk about this shared experience and have the individuals who are in the room with them understand what they are going through from the bottom of their hearts, really, really understand what each other is feeling, thinking. And that is, for some reason, and well, for a lot of reasons, it's healing. Having a shared experience so that everybody understands, or that somebody can really understand what you're feeling, allows you to let go a little bit, as if it's a sense of safety, that somebody can hold on to a piece of that for you. So the second part of that group process would be that you can talk about some of these issues and just share them, let them go, have them be heard. There's something about believing we have a voice and telling our story that begins to allow us to heal. And then in group, what we can begin to do is we can begin to, in this setting, understand the things that trigger a deep response and to begin to bring that response into consciousness and begin to look at it not only on a psychological level, but on an intellectual, cognitive level, so one can begin to talk about the experience differently to themselves, not when they're in the middle of being rendered emotionally incapable of functioning, but before that happens, so they can begin to set up for themselves a mechanism where they'll have some skills to know what they can do to mediate or lessen the response each time it comes up. So in a group setting, we have other people understanding our pain, the ability to have a voice about it, and to begin to learn words associated with feelings and to begin to create skills that you can lessen the response time, understand the stimuli a little bit better. Now, for children who have experienced sexual abuse or violence, I would really suggest for these individuals that they do the same kind of work that we just talked about, but that they do that work with an individual therapist who has a great regard for the slow healing process of the slow healing process that an adult who has been traumatized as a child would be managing and dealing with today in the here and now. But the basic tenets of the healing is generally the same: sharing the pain, having others understand the pain, bringing the pain, finding your voice, getting it off your chest, so to speak, and then beginning to understand your triggers, bringing things back into consciousness in a different kind of way, and beginning to make a plan for mediating those problems. For an adult who has had a traumatic event, also some individual therapy or some group therapy, even for adults who have suffered trauma as a child, sometimes group therapy can be of help to them too. But you need to be very clear that you're not being re-traumatized by the very essence of what's happening in the room. So we've talked today about medication, about group, and about individual therapy to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. I am happy to send you any information, a list of therapists, if you are experiencing any of this. But in the meantime, I really do appreciate you listening to me today. This is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we've spoken today about post-traumatic stress disorder.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy.